Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. On the show today, I have Verla Fortier. She's a really kind, gentle, and just wonderful human. You know those people who, when you're around them, you just instantly relax because you feel like whatever you do, they're just going to carry on smiling and they're not going to judge you. Well, Verla is one of these special people, and she also just has a fascinating story of growth through adversity. She has written a great book called Take Back Your Outside Mindset, which isn't specifically related to the whole coronavirus cooping us up inside issue. It's just generally about the health benefits, both physiologically and psychologically, of going outdoors and the ways that trees can especially help us with our health. And I'm a huge advocate of the outdoors as it is, and I really don't think living in big metropolises, which we do these days, is a good idea. I still find that I mainly live in London, which is a bit of a silly riddle that I seem to have lost myself in. And I can say that recently I've been training to climb the Matterhorn, which is a famous mountain in Switzerland. And the excuse to go tramping around mountains again the last few weeks has been so good for my mind and health, especially after 4 months of being stuck at home. So I really hope that you guys are all getting out as well. Anyway, before this podcast turns into me just showing off about my attempt to climb the Matterhorn, which is, by the way, one of the world's, well, fifth most dangerous mountain. Anyway, I said, but we're not going to go into that now. I'll probably do an episode on that at another point. But yes, Verla Fortier talking about the outside mindset and just lots of cool things that you should know about for life. So let's crack on with the show. And this is Verla.
Yeah, so I guess it'd be interesting just to quickly kind of summarize like a bit of your backstory and what led up to you writing the book, kind of handle things.
Well, maybe I'll go up to when I was retired, because I'm 67 now, so, but I'll go quick. So I grew up in small town Pine Falls in Manitoba, which is in the center of Canada. And if I kind of look at themes rather than go through detail, when I was 10, my dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, MS, which is a degenerative neuromuscular disease. So by the time I was 12, he sort of went from one cane to two canes to wheelchair. So when I was 12, I was moving him from hospital bed in the home to wheelchair. And then after that, we'd always laugh. And then he'd take a long time to swallow. And then he'd take a long time to get the words out. But then he'd say, good for you. And he'd look at me right in the eyes. And I would just feel like the sunshine in the garden was coming on to me. And I just felt wonderful, just wonderful. And so I just looked after, I just wanted to help him whenever I could. And that was often during the day because, you know, I was just 12. So that's, I think, how I got hooked on really helping. And then I went into nursing and then went up sort of the ladder there. I went overseas, India, things like that, London, came back and then was the director of a medical clinic in downtown Montreal and then went back to university out in BC where I could ski and then work part-time in the ICU and then back into policy development in the government and then into the largest teaching hospital in Canada as director of patient care. In there, I got married and everything looked pretty perfect, like snow globe perfect, until my ex-husband walked out the door, left me with two little kids. The youngest was in junior kindergarten. I was at the director level in a hospital. That's when I went across and picked up a full course load as a university prof there. And then we were fine. I had a good time until I was about to retire and do everything I wanted to do.
So, I mean, you say you did everything you wanted to do once you retired. So but it sounds like you're doing things that you kind of wanted to do beforehand. I was like,
yeah, I did. I actually did. But I guess I was picturing freedom. Like when I was looking after my kids, I was looking after everybody at work. And that was good. You know, I was helping them. But then I thought, okay, I'm free. And I was just imagining swimming in like Winnipeg and lying on the warm white sand and going for walks in the bush and feeling like I was just feeling free like a teenager. I'd have enough money and I'd be okay and I'd be with friends and family. And then what happened then was, you know, that's when I was I'd retired and I was all set to retire back to my little hometown of Pine Falls. And so then I had a few things to tie up before I left. And one of them was a doctor's appointment. And I just had a little rash on my face. It took way too long, the doctor's appointment. You know, she found these patches on the top of my head that were bald, but I just kept on switching my part around. And then I had these rashes that I was ignoring. She found more of those and she kept asking all kinds of questions, way too many. And then she reached for my hands and said, we'll do a biopsy and blood work, but I'm pretty sure we're looking at systemic lupus. Then she said, and that, if you don't know what that is, that's like a serious autoimmune disease where it goes after your organs. But as a nurse, I knew what that was. It was bad.
So how did you like deal with that as a response? Were you kind of like worried that you'd be dying like quite quickly, or that you're just going to have to radically change your life? Like what went through your head?
Well, I thought I was going to die because as a nurse, I'd looked after patients in the hospital and there's not much you can do. You just give them steroids. Then they get the hospital infections and then, you know, they would die. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to die. And then she told me, here's the drug of choice, Plaquenil, and it'll help with some of your symptoms. And then she said, avoid the sun. But that hit me harder than the lupus because I was going like, what? Avoid the sun? Everything I do is in the sun. I was just freaked out.
Yeah, that sounds like a good reason to freak out.
Yeah.
Then, so did you stay inside for a long time or did you just decide to break everything you've been told and just sort of enjoy things? What happened?
As soon as I got diagnosed, I got sent to a whole bunch of specialists and that combination, I don't know, I just got more and more diagnoses. Like I got sicker and sicker. I didn't even feel well enough to go outside. And I was trying to be the perfect patient and stay inside and avoid the sun. So I just stayed inside like we are now, trapped inside, you know, like a prisoner in a cell. I did not go out. I couldn't read. I couldn't laugh. I couldn't do anything fun. And I just joined a whole bunch of lupus support groups around the world. And there are so many people suffering that I didn't even know about, you know, but I didn't engage. I just stood back and I just lying there. Yeah. So that was for about a year. So I stayed inside, got sicker. I was awful. Then I stopped looking at the people that didn't look good. I couldn't do it. And I go outside and I thought, what the hell am I doing in here? So then that's when I went outside, felt fantastic. My mind settled down. I just felt like a new person. And that's when I realized, hey, I've got all these nursing research skills. Why don't I quit looking at all the lupus stuff in the peer-reviewed stuff and, you know, see if there's anything to do with anything in the universities that is peer-reviewed that I could trust about trees. And that's when I took that sharp left turn into tree research.
Then led to sort of your findings on like how they can help you and stuff, or did it take a while to find anything useful?
Right away. I was probably messed up a bit, like, but realized probably from the divorce. And then the very first one I found was this Stanford study that they wanted to define the thinking that they were measuring by brain scans. And they said, there's this type of thinking called negative rumination. And it was like all the things I thought, everything that was in my head. If only I didn't get this disease, why am I the only person in this family to be divorced? Why can't I get going? What's wrong with me? Why did I do that wrong? And I'd think back about some embarrassing moment. Why did I do that? And this, like, I had all this in my head. And I did more looking at this broken record thinking, I call it. And they said, if you have that, it prevents you from getting help. I thought, oh my God, I've lived this whole life. So anyway, the Stanford study said that they compared two groups and one went out in the cement and one went out in grass, trees and shrubs, both in the city. And they looked at that part of the brain, the genial prefrontal cortex. And they found that there was like no activity in that part of the brain when they went to grass, tree, shrubs. It took that broken record thinking away entirely, whereas the people that went out into the cement built up environment had the same level of that broken record thinking. So that was huge for me because it gave me my headspace. And then I found all the other incredible stuff, you know, it was just amazing. And it was all done at universities. They wondered, okay, environment causes neuroplasticity. So what do trees do in terms of this neuroplasticity and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's kind of abstract. It's hard to work out why some things happen sometimes when you're not sure of all the variables, but it's something interesting. And you have to know why things work sometimes to sort of just assume that they kind of work. I don't know if you heard of Nicholas Taleb Nassim Nicholas Taleb, but he talks about like not looking so much at the details of science sometimes and just sort of relying on like the results. So if you think about the fact that like if you lift heavy weights, you get stronger. They used to sort of think that it was because it caused like micro tears in your muscles. And then now they're kind of saying like, well, it causes like hormonal changes in the response. And it doesn't really matter what the science of it is that's happening. All you need to know is that if you want bigger muscles, lift some weights. Otherwise, if you look at the details, you know, maybe you'll try and buy a device that will tear your muscles a bit, or now maybe you'll try and buy like hormone replacements or something. But like, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be lifting weights. Like, so you go and live near trees and you have like a better ability to deal with stress and you feel better. Like, just live near trees and kind of thing.
Yeah, like at first I was trying to figure out the why too, because I thought, oh, if I start writing this stuff, people at university are going to think I'm nuts. But then I found people like real botanists and that were talking about those, the tree aerosols that drift down from the top of the trees and what's in them. And then the fractal guy, Taylor, now he's a nanophysicist, and like he did MRI. Like because as a nurse, I believe that if I can understand it, like blood flow in the brain. And Taylor, the fractal guy, he's the one that says that there's this fractal fluency. So when we look at something in nature, it's the reflection of us, and then that, and he's got all these MRIs that prove that our stress decreases by 60%. But he's like really interested in the eye and the body connect. So he's doing these eyes, but he's building in fractal fluency in these artificial eyes. And then he's showing stroke patients fractals, like naturally occurring patterns in nature, like tree branches and veins, and to try to restore brain function even. It's wild. And he's an artist, and he couldn't reconcile the two things because he's an artist and a physicist. And he kept going back and forth between the two. So that's why I like him so much. He's just wild. I mean, and a lot of this research is all interdisciplinary. Just look at the result and not try to figure out why, because you can't really figure out too many whys, and you're exactly right. All the research I found shows the results, and that's what they're looking at, outcomes.
Yeah, as in that you might sort of bottle like tree essence or like try and like give people like a piece of bark to rub on themselves or something, is a thing, when like they should just spend more time near trees or something.
Do you experience stress or have anxiety or chronic pain or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? Well, you're not alone. Many of us do, and personally, I happen to be a woefully normal human prone to all of these things. I'm always trying to find ways to transcend my problems, as you'll be well aware by now, and I was searching for anything that would help on this issue, and I discovered Feels. Feels is a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep, and Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. So this is great for my muscle pains and my broken leg, and getting a good night of sleep after a stressful day of work. It's really easy to take. You place a few drops of Feels under your tongue, and you can feel the difference within minutes. It's important to remember that everyone's dose is different, so leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so. And what's great is they have real human support. So if you're new to CBD, they offer a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience and help you feel better naturally with no high or hangover or addiction. They have a simple membership. You can join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month, and you'll save money on every order. And you can pause, cancel at any time. So Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member by going to feels.com/growth, G-R-O-T-H, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/growth to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/growth.
Going back to the same writer, Nassim Nicholas, he talks about this philosopher who was asked, like, this dog who always like used to sleep in the same spot, like the same tile, and he said like there's a similarity between the dog and like this tile that it sleeps on, and like it just didn't seem to make sense. But then it sort of makes wider kind of thoughts of that, the same way that like humans naturally like sort of reading and writing or something. You can't really sort of put it in, but it's like something that's just like we've just done for like thousands of years, and it's just like it's a natural part of being a human is to want to read and write and to do that as a fundamental thing. And maybe there's like a fundamental thing about being a human that sort of makes you relate to like trees and benefit from them, perhaps, like from our evolution of being apes, right? And where we used to live in trees and stuff anyway, perhaps it's just something that kind of makes us naturally like them and feel a bit happier and more chilled out when we're near them, in the same way that you sort of at a base level want some like shelter and food and these kind of things. Perhaps there's something we're not even aware of that feels
we probably satisfied. Don't even need all the science. Think you're right. It just, for people like me, I need.
Well, I mean, I'm a scientist. I'm not saying that like science is bad. Actually, science is great.
Yeah. So you're right into this.
Yeah. As in, on my course, some of the people did do botany. It's kind of, it depends on what specific like modules you took on what it ends up being called. But sort of some of the ones I did were for like botany and stuff. Did a lot of plant science. It was interesting. But yeah, it depends. But as in, I guess I'm talking about like, if you definitely know the results at like a scientific level of like, okay, if 100% science is proven that being near trees makes you happier and stuff, in the same way that like like if you run 100 people through the experiment of like lifting weights and they grow muscles at like a broader level, you don't need to worry about like the specific things, although it's always interesting to look at the specifics at a scientific level because it's kind of fun to work out why things happen.
What I like about the specifics is it gives me something to say to my head, like your Professor Mitchell in Scotland, he proved that, you know, 3 minutes outside in your self-esteem lift is like that. Like, we all need that. And then
yeah, it's nice to know like what the kind of like a good dose is and stuff, and I think it's helped. Yeah, if you can go out for 3 minutes a few times a day, it's suddenly like, yeah, actually, yeah, I should do that rather than just going for like one walk. So like actually every 2 hours you go outside for 3 minutes.
Or just looking outside, there's tons of parasympathetic research on that, just looking outside a window and what it does to you. And that's really relevant to people that are stuck inside too.
Yeah, right? I think that's one of the things about like smoking that makes it kind of addictive, is that you do go outside or you look out a window for like 5 minutes every hour, and it's like a really nice time to chill.
Before everybody had to smoke outside, that's where all the research came from about the amount of time we spend inside. They were setting smokers, so that like we spend 93% of our time inside.
It does depend on where you live and stuff, and houses like, yeah, London, it's certainly much harder. I try to make a point of like cycling everywhere because I hate like taking public transport and things around London.
Good for you. That's good.
Trying to do a bit of stuff. But yeah, it's a bit annoying when the weather's not so good in Britain and stuff, and it's not like great outdoor gyms like there are in other places. And so kind of to do your exercise, you go to like a gym and you're like,
It doesn't really matter. Like all I think the research says there could be noise or be cement. It doesn't have to be like a perfect park either. And still get a lot of the benefits out of that. Same thing. You know, there can be noise in there.
So what would you say is like the best sort of habits that people could pick up from like this sort of research?
Well, I think just kind of aware that they know, like say habits, things that they could do right away is look outside often and maybe have little things like window lists of what am I noticing, something new, like something old that they thought they already knew. Like Ellen Langer, social psychologist, I love her work. And she says, if we just have that mindset that we're traveling and we apply it to our little life inside. Okay, so we're looking out a window. Why don't we just notice something, one little thing different that we didn't notice before, and make a note of that and do it again. And that connects our neurons, as you know, and puts us immediately in the present. Like I can't meditate and I can't manufacture positive thoughts. I can't do those two things. Probably have ADD or something. But I know that if I notice one new thing about somebody or something, then that's going to enhance this outside mindset that I talk about. So that's one thing. Noticing is good for us. So look outside, notice. And as soon as you do that, you're doubling up the effect there. Step outside, have a smoke break without the cigarette a couple of times, you know, often, maybe 6 times a day if you can. And then know that when you go outside, you don't have to like be very vigorous and do major adventure or anything like that. In fact, most of the research shows that it's simply being outside has the very same effect, whether you're just kind of strolling or doing something super intense. Running's great, but you know, for those of us who are just sort of idling along, that's also really good.
Do you wonder sort of, they talk about the studies of exercise and how much it helps and how much of that relates to just actually going outside to walk rather than that walk.
In fact, Dr. Mitchell compared people that went in the gym and then the people that went outside, and everything was the same except for self-esteem. So he was the one that said that the self-esteem didn't go up in the gym, but it went up outside, like the self-confidence. But what I like about the self-confidence part and the self-esteem part is that when you're sick or you have a chronic illness or some injury, that your symptoms are really tied to your self-esteem. So if you don't feel good about yourself, you have more pain, more shortness of breath, more this, more that. But if your self-esteem goes up, then your symptoms go down. So it's directly proportional to how you feel about yourself. And that's magic to me, because if you don't feel quite right or a little bit different than everybody else, and I'm sure we all do feel that way, at some point or another, we can just go outside, feel better about ourselves, and notice before and after we go outside. Like Ellen Langer says, that we think we're in pain or we're miserable all the time, but if we just notice at different points, like how we feel, oh, I feel better now, oh, I'm better here, you know, not a mess all the time.
I think we're humans, we're prone to notice a lot more of like the bad things. Like we notice every time we get stuck in traffic, we don't know all the time, like the red light, the big lights are kind of green and you just go straight through kind of thing. And you just get stuck in a queue, like, God, I hate queuing, and like this thing's awful. But then how many times have you walked up to a checkout and there's been no one there, like so many times, but you don't kind of go like, oh my God, I'm winning today. So many things have gone right.
Yeah, and that's what I like about your podcast and the people you interview, is that you just open everything up to like general uncertainty, not that fixed mindset of, okay, and thanks. That's what I find so refreshing, that I really attracted me to your work. Kind of like my mentor, because I had to learn how to write the book and then how to tell the story about the book, which I was scared stiff. But I was telling her about your podcast, and she's also a comedian, script writer, and she does story-led marketing, and Sarah Archer, yeah. So anyway, I think it appeals to many people.
It's good to hear. Thanks. I'm going to say just before we go on to other things, one thing we skipped over was like when you said that you first went outside, because I feel, I guess, a lot of people are going to be trapped inside for a long time. What was it like the first time you went outside after a year? And could you describe like the feelings you went through and like the things you noticed?
Oh, thanks for asking that. How I explained to the kids is I felt like I was, you know, in the computer game Pac-Man where you die and then you pop up with a new life. That's how I felt. I felt like I had a totally new life, like a new life force. It was so stunning that I just felt like a different person. And that's why I went, what the heck is going on out here? Like, this is crazy. And I was absolutely high and then calm and then thrilled with myself and my life. And I forgot I had any chronic disease. You know, it was just like everything.
Yeah, that's not quite the experience that I normally experience when I die in Pac-Man. But I get what you're saying. Normally, if I die in Pac-Man, I have a new life. I'm like, oh crap, I've got one less life. I'm probably going to fail at this. I think maybe like a phoenix analogy might be better. If like,
what's a better analogy then?
Perhaps like being a phoenix and getting like reborn, and sort of, because phoenixes like don't run out of lives, but like they come out of the ashes, and it sort of seems like nicer. I mean, I guess it depends on how much
I'm going to use that.
I still get what you mean though from it.
Well, that's the only video game I kind of know.
I'm losing the game. Yeah, I mean, people use phoenixes quite a lot for analogies. Maybe there's something better. The rest of that is great. That's funny though.
Yeah, the emotions were really strong. And the thing is, I felt like I didn't care if I died. I felt like I was committing some kind of lupus suicide. I didn't put my hat on. I didn't have sunscreen. I was just out there like, who cares? And I really didn't care.
Well, do you think you can culture that feeling a bit more so that you don't have to wait until you're desperate before you can go and do these things?
I would say that writing this book and talking to somebody like you on this and getting onto stages, that was the same feeling. It's the same like fear, like I can't possibly do this. Oh, yes, I can. And what's the worst that can happen? I keep repeating that now. So it's been a really, really good thing for me. It's been a gift, really, because I would have been squirreling around in my head still. I wouldn't have taken any chances. I wouldn't have wanted to get this word out and help people like me. I wanted to bring all this research together, see if it would help people, because it really did help me. And then when I started to talk about it, I was way more sciencey than I am now. And that's why I needed somebody to help me kind of craft a story a bit, right?
So how did you go about like the process of then writing a book? Is it you kind of just had lots of time and that was like your only focus? Or how did you make your days? Because I find it quite hard to culture a good practice around writing.
Well, I was writing it down for myself, like notes, but I didn't trust my memory and I didn't really trust the stuff I was looking at. So I was writing down, okay, what's the study? What did they do here? What are they, was it big enough? Blah, blah. So I was doing all these notes for myself. And then I just kind of wrote it. I just kept on writing all this research. And then I heard of this podcast, Joanna Penn. This podcast is called The Creative Penn. And she has this course, How to Write Nonfiction. And she has a fantastic podcast. Really good. And she taught me, and then I took a course on how to write nonfiction. And then she said, you have to do this. There are certain kinds of things, ways to write this. And one of them, she says, yours fits with a transformation story. So I thought, really? And so then I was able to tell my story, because she said that you can't just put all the science facts out there. Nobody's going to want to read it.
Definitely. It's kind of hard to think about what it is you should have put exactly, but like, it works as a story of the transformation that kind of read quite well, like hearing the things that were going wrong for you and how you kind of found these things and discovered them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to present the results, but it's actually how you like package them.
I think everybody has a little transformation story every day and in so many different ways, right? I didn't know it was okay to talk about personal things so much. And they said, yes. And then I didn't know when I took the story-led speaking course that you were supposed to talk about emotion so much and connect your emotions to your story. I thought people would want to know how I got my dad out of bed mechanically, like I had to put the wheelchair by the bed and this and that. No, they want to know how you feel, how that felt. So yeah, lots to learn.
Yeah, it's interesting. And certainly, you know, when you used to do like your, like, I don't know, at my school, you sort of once a week, you had to tell like a story or something, or like what happened recently. And you had, it was very mechanical, like, oh, I did this, we went there, like that happened. And then they kind of didn't really think about how to make it interesting to read. And that, because I found it endlessly boring. It wasn't good anyway. But then realizing that you can do all these things around how you tell stories, and suddenly it makes it like quite nice, and what you actually enjoy listening to, kind of think about these things. And you're like, oh, wow, yeah, I can actually sort of tell quite nice stories myself. And
I know you can. And this is so much fun. It's so liberating. Like Sarah was helping me talk in my presentation, and so instead of introducing myself and everybody falling asleep, she said, like, this is one of my opening. What would you say if spending 5 hours a month outside would make you live longer, prevent dementia, and control your chronic illness? So that's my opener. And then I say, but first I'll tell you about my story, you know. And so then they're perked up for that. So way better than a slide deck. Yeah,
it's like, it's a prop if you've never done it before, which helps get a bit of confidence. But yeah, doing a speaking course actually kind of teaches you what's actually interesting. It's much more important. So how long do you think it took you to okay, good. Was it like you turned up to the course 1 week later, you were good? Or did it take like a whole year worth of practicing and doing it, and were you like more comfortable?
I didn't know if I had anything, but I did know that I didn't have the confidence to go to publisher and all that business. So Joanna Penn's whole thing is to independently publish. So you don't have to go to a publisher, sell your story. And if you want the power, then you should independently publish, because then you have control. You know, if you put it up on Amazon and the research changes, you can update it. There's just so many benefits to independently publishing. So I had to learn that. And I think I was so busy learning. And then the book just came along with it, you know, and I did it in a year, because they say, just get it out there and then start writing your next book, because probably nobody's going to pay attention to you.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like maybe they can have a more ambitious mindset. I'd be like, try and make Ita do a bit more about it. So I mean, it's a good practice if you just get into the habit of just writing books. And if you write 20 books, it's much more likely that one of them is going to be great than if you just sort of try and write one book straight away and it'd be good.
Yeah, she doesn't rush you through. Like, I'm starting on my second book now, but I think it's more confidence, right? Get something out there. And then I hired a really good book cover person. I hired a really good editor. If you're going to independently publish, then you've got to put the money into editing and a book cover and formatting. So you do all that yourself. But I must say, I've had the book out since September. It's number one in Amazon in two categories here in Canada, and already paid for all that and more. Yeah. So it surprised me. And there's a path to follow, and I just followed it. I didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's really funny. There's a lot of time and confidence to do these things.
And just be open to that. People already know how to do it, and then just do it. I think the thing is, people don't do it.
Definitely. It's a great way to kind of mark yourself out as unique and stuff, just by bothering. So I don't want to get the confidence to do, but says someone that hasn't written a book yet and still in the process of writing.
What are you writing about?
I was originally writing a book about my Vipassana meditation. It's like the 10-day silent retreat thing, because you don't even have like a diary or anything the whole time you're there. Like, it's just you and your brain. You don't speak to anyone, or you don't look at people or anything. But I kind of remembered everything that happened. So afterwards, I just wrote everything down over like 3 days, just every single thought process that went through my head. But I kind of wanted to turn that into a story, like a 10-day sort of journey into my mind, because like, I'd never read anything like that going that deep. But I also wanted to make it really like descriptive and like make you feel everything that I felt, which involves being a very good sort of creative writer, which I have no experience in. So I was finding it really hard. So I figured I'm going to write that book next, or maybe like get better at just normal writing. So currently I'm writing a book on podcasting, because that's kind of quite natural to me to just give advice on something that I'm good at.
Fantastic. Right? And that's what I did too.
Yeah. I'm accidentally writing lots of philosophy at the same time. So it's kind of like a life help book wrapped in a theory of podcasting.
My course was how to write nonfiction, and it sells better. It's easier to do. It just comes out of you. Then you have that, like your idea on that retreat is so interesting, because now some people are talking about this coronavirus, you know, using retreat mindset. Yeah, retreat. And, you know, so I think that there's something there, but I'm with you. Like, I'm a real reader. I'd love to write fiction, but right now I'm doing nonfiction. And when I do the science, I keep on with the science, and it just keeps getting better and better. It's all 2020, 2019, very strong. And it helps me. I mean, it keeps me going.
Definitely. There'll be some interesting research from like this time of the people who are stuck indoors versus the ones that you get to go outside a lot more.
I think so.
And you kind of realize how much time you spend inside, like in the day-to-day, sort of when you are in your office and you're at home, but you kind of just notice it more when you're just stuck in the one place. You don't realize that you're spending so much time outside. And when you come to, I guess you just learn the value of being outside a bit more. And so you kind of want to keep hold of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess if they take everything else away, they don't have a choice. So you better just enjoy that.
Yeah. Back to some other relevant stuff. And you said you used to run like an ICU and things. So guessing you have some kind of relevant experience to some of the stuff that's going on at the moment in terms of the crazy like issues in hospitals right now with people trying to deal with millions of patients. Like, did you ever have anything vaguely like what's going on at the moment, or do you have any thoughts about what it must be like?
Yeah, like I was very involved in the SARS when the SARS came. By that time, I was at the corporate, but I was also teaching. So I was getting the nursing students looking for workforce, right? We needed people who knew about nursing. So I would get first, second, third year nurses into the hospital to help. So it was more about getting all hands on deck, people that were willing to do it. And nurses are incredible. They always working by people that are contagious. They can always pick up something. I think like when I first came back to Pine Falls, I always worked in eMERGE in hospitals to keep myself current. So I had lupus, a weakened immune system. I was still working in eMERGE with all these really sick people. But, you know, that's the kind of thing nurses do. And I'm so happy to see them getting the profile and the appreciation because the doctors come and go, but the nurses are right there.
Nice to recognize. Yeah, we tend to think of doctors as more prestigious and stuff and about nurses. Yeah.
And it's the nurses and it's the nursing students and the people that clean the rooms and bring the food and just all these people that don't get much profile.
Definitely. So interesting to sort of see what is actually important at the moment compared to all these people who run around thinking high profile jobs who are just at home doing nothing right now. And like the cleaners and the bin men of the world are like, actually, pretty essential stuff. We really need this right now.
That's, yeah,
risking their lives to go and make stuff run.
Right.
Bus drivers and things.
Essential services.
Funny. Cool.
I've got a workbook to go with the book and it's got these tick boxes in it so that sometimes, you know, we don't have that much insight into how we're feeling. Like at least I don't know until I get outside that I was grumpy, uneasy, or just not really good. So there's kind of tick boxes there. Like how am I feeling before and after I go outside to help you kind of nail down some of that stuff. And then kind of questions in there that once you've got your outside mindset like cleared out, you can ask yourself stuff now, like, is this for me? Is this a tragedy or an inconvenience? And so those kinds of questions, if this is a bad thing, but what if the worst happens? Are there opportunities here? And then ways, and all the research is in the workbook and the questions are in the book too. But what I did with those things, I didn't just put a bunch of research. Once I got my mind clear, I really zoomed in to social psychologist Ellen Langer, who says that you can get the same effect by noticing new things, of getting yourself into the present. And then I just applied that to the outside. And then there's things that you can say to yourself when you're out there, because sometimes we don't even know what to say to ourselves. And if we want to be compassionate to ourselves or recognize my body's working for me out here, I don't feel any pain. Just a whole bunch of ideas to implement this whole research idea. And then things to do outside are also there, like tick boxes that you might have forgotten since you were a kid. But what I wanted to do in the book, like part of it's research, but a big part of it is it was really written for me, my kids, and other people like me that want to just put this all this stuff into action.
Yeah, knowing that I left my iPad, which I have like my e-reading on in London, I kind of left in a bit of a rush because I was doing like a TED speech in Glasgow. So that, then I never went back to London. But yeah, I only got like about halfway through your book, and then I was supposed to like finish the other half preparation. But something to look forward to when I eventually get reunited with my iPad.
Well, I'm so glad you even read that far. And we're interested. I mean, that's because we're a different generation.
But I like going outdoors in science.
I know. My kids were my biggest fans, which were of the book. Like, I thought they might be embarrassed because I wrote about the divorce and they might think, oh, I don't know. But they took it right away. So I think I had to pick that demographic because that's my demographic. And, you know, you have to niche down, they say.
And if you're writing for someone, it pretty comes across as, even when it isn't written for you, you kind of understand it better. If when it has like a specific angle, whereas if you try and write for everyone at once, it's sort of a bit more vague and confusing.
And I couldn't try to pretend I was in my 20s.
Yeah. What is one of your earliest memories?
Oh, I remember often my mom have her clippers with her and then she'd run into a ditch and clip a bunch of weeds and then she'd take them into the basement, hang them upside down and then make them into beautiful arrangements and give them away. So, and my dad would say, your mom needs more weeds. He was so good natured about it and we never really knew what she was doing, but now I see what she was doing.
That's funny. Cool. And then what's one of the kindest things someone's ever done for you?
Well, that's probably my kids again. You're writing a book, right? Like that's the scariest thing I've ever done is it was even more scary than getting the disease or having divorce or anything. Putting out a book, you know, it's just like so scary because you want them to like it and they were kind of, and you know, that's for sure the kindest thing that's happened to me recently. And probably before that would be related to work. You know, when my boss at the Toronto hospital just said, we'll put you on this new thing because we know you can handle it.
Cool. Nice. Okay. Well, thanks so much. Interesting.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you. And can you just tell me about your TED Talk? That's what I'd like to know.
So it's about like technology and developing a better relationship with it. So not letting it kind of take over your life, but getting the best out of it. So then listening to podcasts is great. But if every single spare moment you just fill with podcasts, you never have any time to actually think your own thoughts. You just listen to someone else's thoughts and like should be having conversations with yourself, not just listening to someone else's conversations. And just sort of reminding you to kind of have like the right kind of boundaries and to make get the best out of yourself as well. Because, you know, when you go for walks with nothing, you have lots of ideas. If every time you go for a walk, you constantly listen to other people's thoughts, you don't have the time to be the person you could be, kind of thing.
I love that. I think that's what we get when we're going outside, right? We're forced to be by ourselves a lot and be with our own thoughts, which is really different. Oh, good. How brave. I would love to try that.
Yeah.
How did you practice for it?
I've been doing lots of Toastmasters, which is like a public speaking meetup thing you can go and do. So I joined up to like two clubs to do that every week. And then I had a bunch of competitions going on. So you can go to loads of different clubs as their like mystery speaker. And then they have this competition to do the best review of your speech. So I went to like three or four clubs a week to give a speech that I then get like six people review me because they're competing to give the best review. So I get like so much feedback.
Fantastic. Thanks. You're just as nice in person as you are. Over the podcast waves. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. Good to hear. You're just as nice as you are in your book, I guess.
Keep reading that.
I'm thinking I might just buy like a Kindle anyway if I'm going to be here for another few months before I can get back to my iPad.
Wow. You can use a lot of it. And I just wanted to tell you that, you know, when I'm listening to your whole podcast, I just think of the power of possibility. And that's what you're doing for us. So keep
amazing.
It up.
Yeah. I might use that. Okay. What I'm trying to do, I guess. Just thought of it that way.
Well, it great. Is that way. You take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. My goal for this podcast is to help make people happier and wiser, and I'm also working on a few other projects in the podcasting space to achieve the same thing. I run the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with a friend, where we read and discuss a great non-fiction book a week. We talk about things like philosophy, psychology, the economy, self-improvement, and business. Books such as The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, Invisible Women, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a great resource. Most recently, I've been building an app, Syncify. It's really to level up your podcast experience. You can connect with your friends in the app and listen to the same things. So you can listen live in real time with each other or create shared playlists and catch up at your own pace. You learn so much more by discussing ideas with friends. It's really silly to listen alone. You can also discover and share brilliant episodes with ease without having to try and recommend podcasts in different apps and just it all getting lost and confused. So it's also good for combating isolation and mental health. I personally find social media quite antisocial and I just don't find it easy to reach out to friends to chat for no real reason. But I do love doing things with other people and listening to the same content means that I can naturally talk about the same things and it just gives me that friend time without going out of my way. So I really hope that it can help you and I just would love you to try out the beta version and help us build this and obviously do invite your friends. It's all about friends. So you can find out more about Syncify app by going to syncifyapp.com. Thanks for listening.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests. Or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @GrowthMindsetPodcast or follow me @SamJamSnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.